Luxical is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
I call upon all those who would help and protect us, guide and inspire us, who would aid us in proceeding in ways which are most beneficial for us and those around us. Hail and welcome. I call upon the spirits, guardians, and energies of the North, the South, the East, and the West. I call upon those of the celestial and thonic realms. Hail and welcome. I call upon the spirits, guardians, and energies of the Earth, fire, wind, and water. I call upon those of the Monity and the Void. Hail and welcome. I call upon those of the past, the ancestors and beloved dead, those of the flesh or of the spirit, and of our past selves as we were. I call upon those of the future, wise ones yet to come, and ourselves as we will be with further wisdom brought by time. I call upon those of the present, our best selves, be with us and let us be here and present in this moment. Hail and welcome. And hail and welcome to Luxical. This is, of course, the podcast where we gleefully taunt the mundane, butcher the Latin, and most other languages. And we also discuss a variety of occult and esoteric and adjacent topics, exploring the intersections of magic, art, science, philosophy, technology, and so much more. It's occultism for everyone. I'm your host, Lux Estrada, and if you're hearing the sound of my voice, that means that this show, and magic for that matter, are for you if you want them. There are a lot of different ways to be more free, and using magic or making space for a spiritual practice in your life can be one of them. As always, I do not speak for anybody but myself. Others can, will, and should disagree with me sometimes. How will we ever learn anything if we were all in agreement on all things at all times after all? And as those who attempt to be reasonable should be willing to do, I'm always willing to revise my opinions, and often fucking do, based on new evidence. Alright, stoked to bring you two really great conversations today. First up, I spoke to the very talented visual artist Angela Guyton about what she's learned while pursuing new areas of creative expression. How does a visual artist become a writer? Is the question that she's exploring. But what she shares about this experience could be applied to stretching your wings or moving out of your comfort zone in any artistic or other type of practice. There's a lot of honesty in this conversation, which I think is really helpful, and I appreciate Angie being willing to share about the experience of being in the sort of uncomfortable transitional space that we find ourselves in when we begin to recontextualize how we see ourselves and begin to do new things. That sometimes sticky growth territory or whatever. Second up in store for you is a conversation I had with Merrily Duffy, the delightful host of the Casual Temple podcast. We get into all kinds of things, Kundalini yoga, ceremonial magic, and working with the planets, especially hoary old Saturn, the different approaches present with ceremonial work and psychic or energy healing or things along those lines. And we talk a little bit about what might be going on there in terms of who is into what and why. She shares about her magical mystery tour of getting into the paradigm in which she is currently working. And as I said, Merrily is the host of the Casual Temple podcast, where I was recently a guest to talk about what chaos magic is and some of my own work with the planets and much more. And it was a great conversation, so I will put a link to that in the show notes. You should check it out. If you listen to the show a lot, you might have noticed that I began today's episode a little bit differently than normal. Instead of sharing a poem, I created a magical space for the episode to exist in. In a similar manner as some traditions call the directions or corners or elements or six ways or whatever. I did this for a few different reasons. First off, I wanted to share what I think is a sort of fun twist I've put on the idea. I've received some positive feedback and I thought it would be fun to share it. I've spoken before about how interesting making the show has been as a vehicle for experimentation, and I'll be conducting a bit of magical work as part of making this episode. Creating a proper container in which to do this made sense in this instance, which is the other reason I began it the way that I did. There is a cool poetry snack coming your way later to make up for that magical amuse-bouche you were offered instead today. And there's a lot of fun stuff in this episode to boot, including a spooky bibliomancy break that I did for a Patreon supporter recently that ended up having some fun tie-ins with today's episode. I'll be making an announcement later on after the interviews about a new experiment I'm really excited to launch after sharing a Void Journal entry. Thank you so much to the people who responded to the poll about Void Journal on Spotify and who reached out on Instagram and through email with opinions. The vast majority of people I heard from said that they were into Void Journal, and a few said that they would rather read it, so I will make that available moving forward too. They're not going to be in every episode at all, but they'll show up every once in a while. In the mix will be an update about the Green Mushroom Project and 23 Bibliomancy, and we've got some musings about transhumanism from the listener mailbag. Speaking of which, I'm a pretty introverted person. I don't use social media very much due to it's a lot and overwhelming. And I also have a pretty high volume of work most of the time. I've got a lot of interests and stuff. So I'm not there like checking on stuff every day or anything like that. But that certainly doesn't mean that I don't want to hear from you all, just managing expectations and everything. I'm beyond lucky to have such amazing listeners, collaborators, cohorts, co-conspirators, etc. Always welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations. You can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Instagram at luxoccultpod. If you like the show and the other work that I've been getting into, you can support it on Patreon. If you do so, you can take a bibliomancy break with me. There are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. Buy me a coffee is an option for those who wish to show their support with a one-time donation, but don't want to do the whole Patreon thing. Thank you so much to everybody who is already doing so. Your support really does make this show possible by allowing me to cover the expenses associated with making it, thereby allowing me to justify the time that I spend. I appreciate the opportunity to be doing what I'm doing, and having the resources necessary is integral to that venture, so thank you so much. All right, as I mentioned earlier, Angela Guyton is a very talented visual artist who, when we spoke, was in the process of moving into artistic territory where she didn't feel so at home. Angie is the one who illustrated the very cool Nothing Rhymes with Rats comic. I'll mention here that I spoke with the writer of the same comic, Ramzi Janini, in episode 53, Nothing Rhymes with Rats, with Ramzi Janini, and Cryptids and Conspiracies with Chad from Unearthing Paranormalcy. That episode would make a good companion to this one, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I've met a lot of people who have difficulty with the idea of thinking of themselves as someone who can do art. Sometimes there's been some conditioning, maybe in school or maybe religious scenarios like Sunday school, where people are punished for not doing their art or whatever, quote, correctly, not coloring inside the lines, as it were. This is actually something that came up on Dr. Vanessa Sinclair's show, Rendering Unconscious, when I was lucky enough to be a guest there along with my friend Keats Ross. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But the idea that in the professional art world, there is also this pressure to do things in a certain way for the sake of serving capitalistic aims of selling one's work or pleasing critics or whatever. With all this stuff surrounding the notion of what art is or is supposed to be, there can be barriers to authentic exploration of a medium or practice just like for its own sake. But if we can find our way into that space, there's an opportunity to work some really cool magic and have some cool experiences or even create some cool art that you think looks like art when you're done making it. I mean, or not. The journey can be the destination here too, as Angela Guyton is very good at exploring. The idea of just fucking around and finding out with a visual medium or concept is something she seems pretty at home with, but she's also brave enough to try other things, like writing, and brave enough to be vulnerable enough to talk about it in a way that might be useful for people who are trying to do likewise. So I really appreciate that. I'll be back to introduce the next interview and share a few tidbits, including a poetry snack, a bibliomancy break, and some listener mail. But now, let us journey into my conversation with Angela Guyton. All right, well, my guest today is Angela Guyton. Angela, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I'm excited to hear about what you have going on.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be on, and thank you for asking me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So to give the listeners some context, would you mind providing a little bit of info about what you're into, what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm a visual artist, and I work in a number of different mediums. Lately, it's been drawing and specifically comics, comic strip, comic book making. But I also do a lot of video work and painting, but that's older work. And I draw as well, just as a ubiquitous background hum, I draw, even if it's not narrative based or anything. It's just what I do.
Hell yeah, I love that. I've noticed that you've done a lot of collaborative work. Do you have any thoughts about how the collaborative process works for you?
Actually, my ideas about collaboration have changed recently, or rather, I've been noticing things about myself about collaboration. First of all, I love collaboration. It allows me to connect with people in a very special way that and form these kind of like really close, tight relationships that I don't know if I would get the chance to have otherwise. It's a really unique, relationship to be able to work on a piece of art and discuss concepts and ideas with other people on a deep level while making something. Yeah, it's just really, really great. So that aside, that's my main idea about collaboration. But lately, I've noticed since making comic books. So I've always been able to draw and draw well, and I think I have an okay skill level in terms of comic book drawing. But where I lack is I haven't done any writing for a really, really long time. I don't think I'm a writer. I need to actually start writing to be a writer, I guess. But I haven't written anything for a really, really long time. And lately, what I've noticed myself doing is, because I just finished a couple of really big comic books, is whenever I think, oh, I'd like to make a story or something that's personal to me, but then I'll have an idea for a story and then immediately think, oh, you know who would be really good to write this? And I can think of like several of my friends who are authors or writers rather. And I've noticed that I'm using it kind of like as a crutch to not have to write or to not confront that. And I think at this very moment, you caught me at a really good moment actually, because I'm trying new stuff. At this very moment, I think I have to put the idea of collaborating aside, just so I can develop something that I feel insecure about myself, if that makes sense. And it's really interesting to notice that reflex in myself as well. You know, it might seem positive, like I might be really excited about wanting to contact my friend who can do this thing really, really well. But ultimately, it's a crutch and it's not positive. I need to be able to develop those things myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And that's really fucking insightful. And I think that it is easy to get to a place with things where they feel comfortable and like, yeah, this is going great. You know, like, but are we really challenging ourselves at those times? And I think that like drilling down to actually do that, like, that's the fucking work, dude. Like, that's very cool.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Yeah, I'm gonna be a really bad writer.
Whatever. Well, at least on Adventure Time, a show I really like, that the first step to being kind of good at something is sucking at it. So, whatever.
That is true. Also, Adventure Time, it's so funny that you bring it up. Adventure Time is one of those shows. I watch it and like I have tried to study it. In terms of writing specifically, it's Adventure Time and Seinfeld, where I've like sat down and like try to map out episodes. And Adventure Time, I watch it and it just stresses me out. And I told my partner this and he's like, oh, is it because everybody's screaming all the time? No, that's not why. It's because it's so full of ideas that shouldn't work, that sitting down and trying to make something like that, or like to try to figure out how one even crafts something like that, is just bonkers. It's so touch and go, you know? It's too corny or it's too young, but then it all works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it takes a lot of like weird, disparate elements and somehow knits them together with this like silly yet very heartwarming and profound and sad and insightful all package. So yeah, it's interesting and there's a lot of cool like occult truths in it that I enjoy. So
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. I think, well, obviously they have a team of writers. I know they have a team of writers, and I've heard interviews where Pendleton Ward, I think, was the person being interviewed. He said that each writer will advocate for their own particular thing. Like they each have a thing that they're trying to push. Anyway, yeah, it's just really interesting.
I love that. Yeah,
About
kind of a
process.
sandbox idea. So,
Yeah.
but getting back to your work,
Yeah,
I don't want to derail us on Adventure Time because I will talk about this forever. So, what are you excited about right now?
Yeah, at the moment, I am at the very, very beginning of trying to will myself into making a book where I do both the writing and the art, but it feels very, very like vulnerable and new. And it's so at the beginning that there's barely anything to talk about there other than like just nerves and maybe a little fear and anxiety. So in the work where I'm actually like making things, I guess, instead of just preparing, or I've never been an artist that has started from a place of material first and I think this is the first time when that's happened. So at the moment, I'm really, really, really excited about ink wash, and I'm trying to like just figure out how to use ink wash a bit better. I really like the work of Matteo Scalera. He is an artist. He makes home books, some DC stuff, Batman, and he's so very controlled and can use tones in just a really beautiful way. And I saw his work and felt that's just something I wanted to try to do. So at the moment, I'm using ink washes, using his values, like tone values. It's like bare minimum stuff, but like I'm trying to work out, okay, do I like this tone with like 8 drops of ink in it, or is it this one with 16? Which brushes do I prefer? Yeah, so I'm really into materials, and I'm learning through doing those ink washes that it actually can work really well with this other series of drawings I did that were made out of graphite and graphite powder. So I would sit down and I would just make these marks with erasers and smudges using graphite powder, and images and imagery would emerge out of it, and I would try to tease that out. So I wouldn't go in with an image idea, and it created these really like eerie landscapes, but they seem like really, really distant landscapes, maybe, you know, in outer space, quite far away, or in a distant future past. And they were the scale also seemed to be part of it. Either they were very, very small, like microscopic images, or huge images, like planetary images. So this kind of imagery started emerging, and somehow it has to do with opening credits of that sci-fi show Raised by Wolves. It has like this folklory yet sci-fi beginning where some of the images themselves feel like static shots. They're like these imagined futures, and the aesthetic kind of informed me. So anyway, I'm trying to at the moment merge some of that imagery and some of that process with this ink wash material that I've started using. And the ink wash works well with it because it leaves like this film grain texture because of the paper. And it has a really nice quality that the graphite doesn't have. The graphite is much softer, and they look more like, I guess, daguerreotypes, these metal images.
Yeah,
You
no,
know,
that's
anyway.
really cool. I really love I love playing around with materials and just like seeing what emerges and shit. And like one of the things that I'm hearing you say, this idea of these landscapes emerging out of this, like, you know, just playing with these materials, like it. I'm a huge nerd for like fractals and shit. And this kind of speaks so much to that to me, not just as like how we interpret it, but as the actual media is interacting with the page and stuff. This is also what's happening in all these different orders of magnitude. So yeah, I think that's so fucking cool.
Thanks. Actually, bringing it up, another aspect of it was the graphite drawings themselves were made around the time when Elon Musk and Bezos were at first launching their dick rockets up into space. It's like obscene. But it felt like a like an intrusion. So I was making these kind of like landscapes, and they felt like, I don't know, special, like quiet places. And juxtaposing this imagery that I associated with space, and then seeing, yeah, just like Jeff Bezos's rocket launch up, and reading that they just want to like throw trash up there and have moon resorts. That's the Virgin guy's idea. What's his name? Richard Branson. He wants to have
Yes.
moon resorts.
That is straight out of a Robert A. Heinlein book. I'm not joking.
I haven't read any of their books yet, but yeah, it's like, is this the best idea, just to like rent dune buggies and like have hotels? Like,
I
can't we
guess
be
it's also on Futurama,
yeah yeah so like the juxtaposition of those two things, like this is the best they can come up with. They want to go up there and just fucking like trash incredible sacred place. Like, is this the pinnacle of like our evolution? Like, we're just going up there for what? Like, it's
gods,
insane.
dude. Yeah, no, that's a great point. So it sounds like you might have like an interest in space in general.
Not in like an academic way or anything like that. I just remember, and I don't want to get like too teary-eyed or anything, but I remember my dog dying and feeling like we buried her in space.
That's really beautiful. And there is, you know, Sirius the dog star, you know, like that's a it's a big thing in a lot of cultures. And yeah, it's kind of cool. I read on your updates that you now have a variety of dogs. Is that true? I think I remember nine. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have 9 dogs. I'm a sucker.
I love that. Okay.
I moved here with two staffies,
And
and
you're in Portugal, is that right?
I'm in Portugal, yeah, in Porto, in a very small town called Paso de Sousa. And it's just outside of Portugal. Like, Portugal's a big area, but there's the main city. I'm outside of it. But yeah, now I have 9 dogs. Like a whole bunch of them were born on the land. A pregnant stray stayed, and we take care of her as well. But she had several puppies.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's how I ended up with my cats. I wasn't planning to have any, and then a stray adopted me, and now there are several because she was pregnant. So,
Yeah, you're also a sucker. Yeah.
indeed.
So that's where I'm with the work I'm making. I also make a couple of video series with my partner where I'll take a conversation he's had with somebody and just like I'll try to infotainment their conversation to add little like infographics and things that pop up on the screen, and I do the editing and all that for those series, and another series about improvisation. So those two are ongoing, and that's basically the bulk of my work at the moment.
Very cool. I've noticed that you had a workout, Paradoxical, that sounded very interesting. I live in Florida, and so the fact that it took place in Miami kind of like struck me. And the fact that there were paranormal investigators, I thought was also very fun. Could you tell us a little bit about that project?
Sure. Paradoxical is a project with me and my friend Jason Chestnut, and it's actually a work we've been working on together for several years. We got an issue out a while back ago. I realized I wanted to redo the drawing style in it, and in wanting to redo that and revamp it, he changed some of the text as well, although not as drastically, dramatically as they changed the art style. It was just a little bit of editing. He did cut a whole scene out. Yeah, but the art style change was the big change there. It's a story he's been working on for a while as well. As you said, it's about a paranormal murder mystery that happens in 1920s Miami. Paradoxical Book One collects issues 1 and 2, and I was just able to take it to my first Comic Con, actually, which I attended as an exhibitor, but I hadn't even been to a Comic Con as a consumer, as a scrub. It
Straight
was
to VIP, all right.
straight to it. Like, yeah, I was able to sell that there along with like some Rats books. Yeah, I'm quite proud of it. I'm really glad and happy that I was able to like work with Jay on it as well. He's a really good writer, and in having a story that I could just work on, I was able to develop a lot of my understanding of comics through his work. It was pretty collaborative. It was great.
Oh, yeah, very cool. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts or advice to offer people who are like looking to expand as in the similar way that you're doing. Is there anything that you would point to as something that's been helpful? It sounds like it's kind of early in the process, so forgive me if that's putting you on the spot.
Well, in terms of comics, definitely. I've made several comics, but I would say I'm still, yeah, like you said, quite early in that process. Although, to be fair, I feel like a perpetual beginner in everything I do. So,
Fuck yeah, that's cool. I mean, yeah, that's, I think that that's a good place to be at. You can't really learn anything if you think you already know everything. So, yeah.
This is another thing I talked to with Ramsey actually at the con, that while what we're talking about is true, and that's definitely an aspect to it, another aspect of it is to like not always prepare, not always be preparing, I guess, to do the thing you care about now. I think Francis Bacon, this is a bad example because he actually made brilliant work, but Francis Bacon would name all his paintings a study for. So a study for Pope Francis, a study for
Yeah, this isn't the actual thing. I'm just practicing, right?
yeah.
Like, yeah, okay.
And it's really interesting because what does that, I mean, he was trying to say something about the work. Was he self-conscious? I don't know too much about it actually. I just know that he named those things that. But yeah, I'm almost like I'm in my 40s now, and I'm trying to live in a mind space where I'm no longer preparing. Like, how long must I be preparing for this or that? Like, I need to make the book I want to make, and it needs to be the thing now. Not that I'm always preparing, but you know what I mean? Like, I need to remind myself that I am ready. I don't need to prepare myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I think that I'm kind of trying to get to that place too, where it's like, I want to do this stuff, but it's like, oh, I'm X, Y, or Z enough. And it's like, well, no, that's up to you to decide, right? And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bit of that is imposter syndrome. I mean, not that I feel imposter syndrome, but like I'm just pontificating. A bit of that might be imposter syndrome. A bit of it is just you're in school for 12 years. You know, that childhood is basically framed as a preparation for adulthood instead of just seeing childhood as a thing in of itself. So I think it's probably conditioning.
Yeah, that's a fucking great point.
Oh, so you asked me what advice would I give? Maybe not in terms of like comics. Although the best advice I can give is actually if you want to get into comics, just start making them because there's a lot to get into. It's its own thing. And storytelling through imagery and the merger of text and imagery is not each of those things together, but you bring those things together to make its own thing. It's kind of like poetry in a way. It's not just less words put in a different order or in a certain format. It's its own thing. That's how I feel about comics. And I guess in terms of where I am just as an artist, I think wanting or watching out for the things that you want might be important. So like if you don't want anything or want to do anything, you can't enjoy that and you won't do anything. So if you want to do something, I know it seems very simple, but when I was maybe like a bit depressed, I found I didn't want to do anything. I lacked any desire to do anything at all. So when I started wanting things again, it was pretty cool. So if you want to do a thing, enjoy the wanting, recognize the wanting, and take advantage of that because it's a thing that can go away, apparently.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really fucking powerful, dude. Hell yeah. Is there anything that I haven't asked about that you would like to discuss, or do you have any questions that you would like to ask me?
I guess, have you read any comic books and what are you into? Just out of curiosity. You like the rats, I assume.
I do. I love the rats. I'm not a huge consumer of comic books, to be honest. The last one that I read besides the rats was Grant Morrison's Invisibles,
Okay.
which I read for a book club that we do on the Discord server, the Green Machine. So we were kind of reading it in the context of looking at it, not just, as being a comic book, but also being an example of this like hyper sigil technology. Because Grant Morrison, messed around a lot with like putting himself into it. And so, yeah, I think that that's very interesting. And there's been a lot of times, like in the past, I used to be into the Johnny the Homicidal Maniac graphic novels and things like that. And there was a short period where I enjoyed some manga as well. So, yeah, I have a kind of touch and go. I know some of my friends are, have these deep, passionate relationships with comic books that I don't share, but I do respect it as a very, very cool media.
In response to one of my answers, it sounded like you were an artist yourself because you worked with materials. Is that true?
I
Yeah.
like to get down with all kinds of shit. I've always just kind of enjoyed fucking around and finding out. What I'm doing most of recently is like music production and like a little bit of visual graphic design stuff and self-photography that I'm contextualizing as glamour magic, or kind of like magical thirst traps, if you will.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been cool. And I've always been into visual arts and shit. And I'm flirting with the idea of taking some voice lessons too, so I can sing and stuff. And I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, learning to sing would be amazing. Like I have this whole thing like with voice. I don't know what it is or why, but it's something I'm thinking about a lot. Yeah, just finding your voice, having a voice, people that don't have voices, and if I have one, what does it want to say? I guess it goes along with the writing idea. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And maybe why do I feel like what is that stopping me? Like why am I not? I'm trying to figure that out. Maybe it's a way to procrastinate from actually writing. I don't
I do that all the time. I love to trick myself like that.
know.
It's so funny. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. It's like, all right, well, I want to do this thing. I have this inclination. So like, why am I not already doing it? Like, what ideas do I have about myself that are telling me that I'm like not the kind of person that could do that or whatever? And like, are those ideas valid when I interrogate them against reality and all of that good stuff? Yeah.
What would you say is your main block? For me, it's that idea of preparation. No, I have to figure out how to do it, and I'll read things about how to do the thing that other people have suggested, and then I'll get into that and just not start. What's your primary method to trip yourself up in that way?
Gosh, I think that I'm still working on this, but sometimes when I make things, I get like a very strong urge to do so. And I just sit down and I do it. And I sometimes have to like cancel other things in order to like, when that urge arises, like I really do try to like take advantage of it and stuff. Like a lot of what I make kind of feels like I don't know, almost like channeled or something. So there is a workflow process where I can like top down, map things out, and like make a very solid structure for like filling in with creative work. But that's not usually how it happens easiest for me. So, I mean, this, yeah, it can happen, but it's usually very clunky. I usually have to fight myself, like taking a sort of organic approach and like having an idea of what I want to make, but maybe not when, and letting it arrive in its own time. Like, maybe having a sort of a willingness to, as you said, be receptive. And also, there's also, I would have to admit, a time management element in this for me as well. I think that there's times where I overcommit myself and don't have the time to like dedicate to the things that I really feel like I want to be doing too. So I'm working with those kinds of like, you know, internal boundaries or whatever you want to call them too.
Yeah, well, with regard to that, you just reminded me, a friend of mine, I work that way as well, where you just feel like you can do this thing and then it just flows. I was speaking to my friend Jay Gilligan. He's a really good juggler, and he talks about these two different ways of working. He knew a juggler that would just sit there and wait to feel as if he could do something amazing. And he said what he likes to do is just do things even when they don't feel that way, because then he'll have used up the whole time that they had and he can make decisions in that time. So there's more ground. And what he's doing is practicing decision making. He's not always just trying to make the perfect thing or the thing he feels the most. So he does things even if he doesn't want to do them, which, I mean, there's merit in that as well. I can, why not both, you know?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for like, you know, disciplining yourself and doing the thing, even if it's like, I don't feel like it. And then also really taking advantage of those like tides when they arise.
Yeah, for sure. Rick Rubin, in his new book, he talks about if you feel that, literally don't do anything else. Do it for as long as it takes until you finish it. Like, if you're feeling that thing, finish it. And I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you can ride that wave, he says if he gets into the recording studio and that's where they're at, they'll cancel everything. They'll just go with that. They won't revisit recordings or do the rest of their processes or whatever they had planned that day. They're doing that thing. It comes from him. He would know, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Well, Angela, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. This has been awesome. Where can listeners find your work?
I have a webpage, angelaguyton.com. I'm also on Instagram at angieastronaut.
All right. Fuck yeah. Any last parting words you'd like to share with the listeners and I?
Parting words. Be confident. Make stuff. Make stuff even if you're not confident. Make stuff.
Fuck yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Greetings, Lexa from the future here. Thanks so much to Angela Guyton for joining me. It was really cool to hear about her experiences and perspectives. I really loved hearing the thought processes of approaching these different mediums. As I said before, I really appreciate Angie being willing to share authentically in a way which I think a lot of artists or people who want to make art but don't think that it's for them yet, since they don't think about themselves that way, will find helpful. So don't forget to check out Angie's awesome work at angelaguyton.com and on Instagram. I'll put links to that. She's got a lot of different styles, a lot of different stuff out there, very prolific, so give it a gander. Later on, I'm going to share about a new experiment I'm really stoked to start called the Void House. It's going to take me a second to explain my kind of thinking surrounding all of that, so let's go ahead and do listener mail and shoutouts now, as well as enjoying a bibliomancy break and a poetry snack. Greetings to the Jerk Circle and all of my fellow miscreants behind the digital curtain. Much love to the Pocket Wiz. Shout out to Donnie J on Instagram, as well as to Mademoiselle Vendredi, who let me know that she's got some very cool classes and workshops coming up this summer. Go ahead and check out her Instagram to see that. You can also hear she and I discuss a variety of different things that she's been up to in The Magician and the Machine with Eric J. Millar and Mademoiselle Vendredi, as episode 74 of this show. So in response to some musings that I shared in the last episode about the whole Neuralink thing and whatnot, Abra shares these thoughts. Greetings, finally listened to your latest cast and you asked our opinion. Well, here you go. The evolution of humanity is just going to happen as the Earth tries to reproduce itself.
Transhumanism via the interface of technology and the human brain is the obvious next step. As an optimistic macro thinker, I have accepted my dot on that line. But recently, I have concerns that have put a menacing record scratch on my optimism. At what point will technology gain control over consciousness, giving it the ability to create an internal credit score, a medium case scenario, creating a heaven and hell that has never existed? It has been easy to ignore the biblical warning, but now I can't. At first, I was excited about the idea of my consciousness being uploaded to my favorite video game, and now Revelation 9:6 runs through my thoughts. During these days, people will seek death, but will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them. I apologize for this horrible paranoid thought, as it has done what nothing else has been able to do in my decades of happiness and optimism. Still hoping for a video game reality. Aside from that, thank you so much for all the great work. Right on, thanks to Abra for sharing those thoughts. I guess in a response here, I would say that, well, simulation hypothesis holds that we may already be living in a computer-generated world. And some conceptualizations of this, you know, hypothesis, we want to get in touch with the part of ourselves that's outside of the game, sort of like holy guardian angel kind of a concept. This thing that can see maybe more of the big picture or whatever. It seems to me that choosing to go live in a simulation would be like sort of like going backwards from the standpoint of like trying to climb out of the simulation that we're already in if we're taking this holy guardian angel, getting in touch with the part of yourself that's outside of the simulation perspective. That seems like a, I don't know, going in the wrong direction or something. I'm not sure though. It could just be simulations all the way down and up. Lots to consider there. What do you think? You can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or find me at luxoccultpod on the Instagram. All right, let's rock into a bibliomancy break. So this is for Patreon supporter Chris Haddock. Thank you so much, Chris, for your support and for allowing me to share this. I think there's some fun tie-ins here, so let's take a listen. Chris's question is, how do I make the most out of my upcoming media appearance? Greetings, Chris. This is Luxa, here to do your bibliomancy reading. Thanks so much for the support. I appreciate it. All right, so the text that I have rolled on is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert M. Piersig. Oh, Eris, how can Chris make the most of the upcoming media appearance? Chris, 6, sits beside him with sweater on because the heater doesn't work. And through the dirty windows of the windblown car, they see that they move forward toward a gray, snowless sky between walls of gray and greenish-brown buildings with brick fronts, with broken glass between the brick fronts and debris in the streets. All right, hot to the touch, Eris. It starts out with your name, so that's fun. The number 6. And then we have this gray wintertime imagery with sweaters because the heater doesn't work. So it's possible there could be some abstract lessons in here, but there could also be some very pragmatic advice about what type of conditions you might be physically in this performance media space, whatever it might be like, and a reminder to take care of oneself physically. So those are just some thoughts. Regardless, I hope that this has been helpful, and I hope that it goes well / you break a leg. Cheers. All right, Luxa from the future back with you again. So that was fun. Chris wrote back to me the following. Man, that bibliomancy was spooky spot on. First, my name is Chris, like you said, but also my date of birth is the 6th. The media appearance is the Casual Temple podcast, which is just me and another person talking for others to watch or listen later, so even the setting seems to fit. And then he thanks me for the divination. Well, thank you so much for your support, Chris, and for allowing me to share this. Really looking forward to hearing you and Marilee's conversation. So this is kind of the perfect segue to lead us into my chat with Marilee Duffy of the Casual Temple podcast, where is discussed the connections between the unseen world and how that empowers one to know one's true self. Something that Marilee Duffy and Angela Guyton have in common is that they both seem really open to trying new approaches, whether it's to art or to magic. We will hear about Merrily's journey into weirdness, in which she confidently pursues a variety of different approaches to magical work and comes away with some really interesting perspectives about the intersection she found in doing this. There's a lot of cool stuff to sink your teeth into here, and I'm so excited to share it. I'll be back after the interview to share a Void Journal entry about the intersections of what goes on in ritual magic and a kinker BDSM practice, as well as to give you an update about the Green Mushroom Project and more. To lead us into that conversation with Merrily, I'm going to share a poetry snack which was written by Dave Neal called On the Train. Thank you so much to Dave for sharing this and allowing me to read it here, as well as for being a guest on the show to talk about trauma and resilience in episode 26, Metacognition, Neuroplasticity, and Healing from Trauma with Dave Neal. This is On the Train. Hawk-nosed ladies speak of laundry detergents and Key West vacations, but I maybe mishear the entire conversation as my filtration system is clogged by daydreams like sunflowers and a well-worn Stevens volume stained with scents of licorice. Wallace and I have ridden together 3 days straight. We fail in understanding each other, but love to hear the words play their melodies against the window. We drive towards the point of pure existence, before intention and perception stumbled in drunk and ruined the party. Before anyone questioned divinity breathing in our ears from the cradle onward. All right, well, my guest today is Merrily of the Casual Temple. Merrily, how is it going?
Oh, it's great. Thanks, Luxa.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining me. So, to kind of introduce yourself to the listeners, could you give us a little bit of an idea about what you get up to over at the Casual Temple? I love that name, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so the name is sort of indicative of what things I like to talk about. Mainly, it's been around sort of people's different approaches to spirituality and different spiritual paths. I've even had people on that were even atheists, because I do kind of consider that a spiritual path. They might consider otherwise. But, I do think it's kind of like talking about ways of being. I'm always a seeker. I love to learn. And as much as I think the audience gets a lot out of the discussions I have, I get so much more just because it gives me such a broader understanding of my place in the world and how everybody's kind of operating in their own universes and approaching things. So I think it's just a really cool thing to do. And I'm sure you probably experience the same thing doing your podcast. But, and then mainly for me is like personally, I come from a background of being a seeker. I kind of a foray maybe like 10 years ago, starting with Eckhart Tolle, which I think a lot of, I've learned a lot of people sort of kind of dip their toes in with Eckhart.
Sure. Yeah. A classic.
Yeah. Yes. So classic. You know, I do think he really is great about drawing attention to that awareness point that we all have, that we don't ever sit still and figure out that, oh yeah, there is something. If I'm still enough, I can kind of sense that there's something just still and watching and aware. And then maybe about 8 years ago, I started a practice of doing a Kundalini yoga, and it was mainly to alleviate a back injury that I got during a car accident. It was a low speed car accident, so it was a huge deal, but it was enough that it like really wrenched my back.
And yeah, so, it doesn't take much. The back is delicate for sure.
I know. It's like connected to all the things. It folds everybody up. And so I started doing Kundalini yoga practices, and then mainly because I thought, yoga is good for stretching, but I've done yoga before. And I was like, I don't like the Western approach to yoga personally, because it feels like not complete, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like the kind of just hatha yoga that's very physically based, that doesn't have a lot of the like kind of theory behind it, is I think maybe one way of thinking about it. Yeah,
yes. Beautifully explained. And the Kundalini teacher that I found here in Seattle is where I'm from, or located in, and he has now since passed, but his name is Sada Simran. And the way my very first class with him, he's like, look, we're going to do some Kriya yoga. You're going to sweat a little bit. then we're going to kind of do a gong layout. Okay. And he's like, that this whole process is to prepare you, because then we're going to do 11 minutes of meditation and chanting. And so it was like an hour and a half class of like doing all of this. And I was like, okay, I see that it's not only just the stretching, but it's like, you know, working on like your energy centers and getting you prepared to kind of still your mind. You know, it was like, I was like, yes, this is what I think yoga should be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've been getting really into yoga practice, like just my home practice, that I've kind of made this very intentionally constructed sequence that I'm doing in like a ritual way in the morning. And yeah, I'm kind of low-key obsessed with it right now. I'm really enjoying it. So yeah, it makes sense. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. And I do think I've kind of noticed this actually a lot, not to jump around too much, but recently I've noticed with a lot of magical practitioners, there's a focus on the body, which I'm really excited about, like doing yoga, right? Getting in your body, finding a physical activity that you really love to do, you know, all this stuff. So yeah, I'm really happy that you're doing like a really very intentional yoga practice. That sounds wonderful. Yeah, it's
rad. Okay, so you got into the Kundalini yoga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I got into the Kundalini yoga. The reason I bring it up is during 2020 is when kind of a lot of the deluge of mystical things were happening for myself and my husband. So much so we were calling that year like the magical mystery tour. Just
That was an intense year for me magically as well. I started my podcast that year, and yeah, a lot of crazy stuff happened that year. Yes. For sure.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things that happened was, it was basically the main thing that happened was, because, you know, it was locked down, couldn't go do my Kundalini yoga anymore, but they moved to online. And, you know, obviously I couldn't have my, you know, wasn't going to work. So I had to, I had to set up my workstation like in the living room. So I had these big black monitors on and all this stuff. Well, I was doing the Kundalini yoga there in the living room, and I had like my laptop up, like kind of by on the desk by the monitors, and, you know, following along. And we had just done like a bunch of Kriya movements, and then we were just slowing down for like a 5-minute meditation. Well, I'm sitting there and I come out of the meditation and I open my eyes and I look, for whatever reason, I looked over at one of my monitors and there's like something there, like floating kind of almost off of the monitor, to be honest, like off the bottom of the monitor. And I was like, what is that? I was like looking at it and it looked like two snakes. It's, you know, I know now it was a caduceus, right? Like the Hermes symbol.
Yeah, that's interesting though. Okay, very cool.
Yeah. But at the time I was like, what is it? It looks okay. I was like studying. Okay, it looks like it's forming a heart. Like the faces are meeting each other and they're intertwined. And that's very interesting. I can't see wings, but I feel there's wings coming off of this thing. You know, I was looking at the monitor to see if there was like a shape there. And like it was like a afterburn on my eye. And okay. I was like,
so I was going to ask if it's like a sort of like a visual image, right? Or is like a shadow, or like I'm kind of trying to get a picture in my head of this experience.
It was kind of like it was gold, but it looked, I'm trying to think, kind of like smoke, right? It was like really faint.
Interesting. So this is like, I mean, what we would maybe consider like a visual hallucination. Like some people are very like visually oriented. I'm more audio oriented. I sometimes hear strange things. Yeah. As I'm much more likely to hear things than to like see them per se. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So it looked kind of like smoke, essentially, like really, really faint, right? And I thought, oh, maybe it's an afterburn. So I'm looking at on the screen that I was watching. I was like, well, there's no shape that looks like this on the screen. That's weird. And I look back and it's still there. And I'm like, okay, weird. And I'm looking around my room and I was like, is there a shape that looks like that also making an afterburn? I was like trying to find like a logical reason why I'm seeing this.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, as one does, right? Like that totally makes sense.
Yeah. And then so I looked back, still there. I was like, okay, this is very interesting. I'm going to notate it because I still had about, I don't know, 45 minutes left of my class. You know, and so I kind of looked there. I think it stayed for a good 3 to 5 minutes. Like it was just there.
Okay. So it's just chilling there with you. Just
chilling there. And then it, you know, eventually it like faded. And then after the class, I was talking with my husband and then he was just, you know, and I was like describing it. And he was like, oh, that's a caduceus. And I was like, what? And it's just so funny. I was like, I didn't know what that was. I was like, I have no idea what that is. And then I thought, you know, it took a few days, but then I thought, oh my God, I was like, wow, there's a lot of things that are coming up about magic, things that are coming up around, you know, focusing. And so that kind of just kicked me off looking at different magical practices
I mean, and I was going to say, even the idea of Kundalini and the
Yeah.
serpent rising up, and it all tracks very, it makes perfect sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is all kind of like I was seeing sort of these connection points with that. And then I decided that I would go and do, I started working with like the Western ceremonial magic and did that for a little while. But then the things that I found, and I'm sure I know you do like some planetary stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I found that working with the planets like really resonated with me, really worked. And so that's kind of where I just, you know, worked off of. I was like, well, this seems to be really resonating. Yeah, there's all this ceremonial magic stuff, or there's like a lot of intense rituals I got to do. I'm like, I'm not so sure I'm down with that.
Yeah, I mean, and you can do ceremonial magic and work with the plants. There's all kinds of ceremonies to do, like, yeah, I mean, gosh, yeah, there's all kinds of ways. But yeah, there's a lot of the systems of ceremonial magic can be very prescriptive in terms of like, you know, how they're done. But ceremonial magic in general doesn't have to be like that, I wouldn't say. But yeah, splitting hairs here.
Yeah. And so it was basically I incorporated some of the rituals I was doing, but kind of tweaked them to kind of serve what I was doing on a daily basis, like honoring the planets, different planets every day, that kind of thing. And experimenting with sigils, I found that sigils worked really well for me too. Like
this
that.
Is all making a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was just like, I really like, you know, working with this. But then, you know, as I was doing these magical practices, doing, you know, the LBRP, doing the other sort of rituals you do, I was starting to get approached by beings, right? Mm-hmm. Just like I would feel like presences in the room with me. And I was like, what is going on here? I don't...
Yeah, well, people get curious, right? You know,
right.
That's how it seems to me, at least. Yeah. It's like, what's going on over here?
Yeah. What's going on? What are they doing over there? And then they start getting in your space 100%. And then I just started getting messages and things. And I, you know, and I wasn't sure how to process all of this. So I would ask, like, in my magical communities, like, hey, is anybody experiencing this particular thing? And some people would be like, oh, but I, you know, and they would say, some people would say, oh, I experience it, but in this way. And I was like, okay. But, you know, maybe not to where, you know, I'm getting very specific messages, seeing very specific beings in my space, and I'm not exactly sure how to manage it, right?
Yeah. If it's becoming problematic, you're like, well, I need some advice about how to like confront this issue.
And so I was like, well, what do I do? You know, so I was like, what do I do? And then, you know, I was seeing an acupuncturist, and there happened to be a table like in the lobby of where my acupuncturist was. And then there's like all these cards for the different businesses in the building or in the house that it was in. And I looked at it and there was like, oh, there's this pamphlet for, it was like Psychic Tools 101. So, you know, I was like, I think I need to know how to manage the psychic energy. Because while like, I know in the magical practices, it's kind of, in my opinion, from looking at all the different works, it's kind of on the edges of what is talked about. It doesn't really necessarily give you the steps, right? The steps are like, meditate, right? You know, like, okay, I'm doing that already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is a lot of places, I think, where like, you know, we talk about astral work and astral travel and things like that. But yeah, things like, I mean, there's the idea of like psychic self-defense and things like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, this has the word psychic right in it.
Right.
So we're kind of already kind of coming into this other realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I was like, well, okay, I'm going to take this class or and then see, you know, and they're, you know, from what I can gather, like the ladies that run it are kind of, you know, more along sort of new agey types and, you know, like maybe a little more, people would probably put them in the hippie camp, like older hippie lady camp.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, intersections of, like different types of witches. And that's definitely one that I've met a lot of. So
yeah. And so I was like, I think I'll go to, you know, because I need some feminine energy, right? To be honest, like the ceremonial magic stuff seems to be very masculine overall.
I mean, a lot of the authors that, it comes from a very like historical tradition of being very, you know, written mostly by men and practiced by men. There's a lot of, you know, grimoires that are like, don't let women fucking read this shit.
Right, exactly.
Yep. Kill you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see why you would say that.
Yeah. But I know, you know, there's one of the most highlighted book in my collection, right, is Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah, right? So I know that there were women in those practices, it just doesn't, you know, it wasn't it's just not as prevalent, you know?
Yeah. And she's like much, much later, you know, right. than a lot of these, like, you know, this is, that's almost kind of getting into like the modern era of occultism with the Golden Dawn and that whole crew. Dion Fortune, yes, very influential and like most people of her time, full of problematic ideas.
100%. Yeah. 100%. I think I even said, somebody asked me like, what was my favorite magical book? And I was like, Mystical Kabbalah by Dion Fortune. But I'll just let you know, she was a lady of wealth and privilege in Britain. So she's going to have opinions that I don't agree with.
Yeah. And that, and not to pick on her, because these were opinions that were held by the others in her circles.
Totally.
Like, you know, Crowley said similar things as she did it too. And so, yes. I'm sure that people will look back on the things that are said, you know, kind of blasé-ly today and with shock and horror, hopefully, as things become improved and improved and improved as we move on. So, yes.
Beautiful way of looking at it. Yeah, they should. I hope they look in shock and horror of the things I say. And I'm like, good. I hope it's much, much better in the future.
Sure. Yeah. We'll probably look back on this conversation in 5 years and be like, ooh, that was kind of problematic what I just said. You know, and that's okay. We, you know, we all live and learn and as time goes on. So, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I got us on.
I feel like I totally sidetracked us. I'm so sorry. You were telling me about how you were getting, you know, kind of bringing these two types of practices together with the psychic work.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. So I started taking psychic tools lesson from them. All in to say, they had like a year long program called like clairvoyant awareness. And I was like, okay, I'll take this program. So basically, I spent a year kind of learning how to use and manage like your psychic energy. You know, learning how to ground, learning how to bring in like neutral cosmic energy, you know, in the space that you've cleared out because you just did a grounding, intention setting, you know, very similar to, similar things you do in magic.
It sounds kind of, I've played around with the, like the Monroe tapes and like, it sounds like there's some similarities there for sure of like, you know, setting this pattern, patterning this image into the hologram matrix of reality or whatever.
So it was just that. But then they did so part of the program was when I was like, I don't know about this, which was doing energy healing, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this is even more woo than all the stuff I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah. This is definitely getting into the woo here.
It's super woo. But, and I'll just explain really quickly. Basically, the practice is you are doing kind of aura readings and then kind of aura, kind of like removing cords for a client or like maybe like making the energy less, you know, flow a little better or whatever. But you use.
It's like, I see stuff stuck all over you. Let me get it off or whatever. Yes. Okay.
Exactly. But you use healing guides, right? That attach to the back of your hands, which I've never heard of this in any other system.
Yeah, that's interesting. The energy healing stuff that I have studied, you did ask guides and you asked for the person who you're working on. You had to ask permission from them and their guides to help. The guides being attached to one's hands was not part of that particular system that I studied too. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't know. And the thing is like, you invite the guides, right? It's not like there's like a set guide that you tap into as a group or anything like that. It's just like, you know, invite the guide that is attached to your left hand, invite the guide that attaches to your right hand. And by golly, if there wasn't opened the channel up, there was a guide there.
I guess if you ask there to be, I don't see any reason why there wouldn't be in my experience. Like, I mean, so that makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's, you know, sort of started, you know, doing the energy healing. And then the funky thing was, you know, as I'm working with people, we would have clinics every week and have folks come in and we practice on them. And then I was started to see, like, I would kind of run my hands through, you know, not on them, but like through their aura or near them. And I could sense things about what was going on with their body. And I could even see sort of stuck and tight energy. I'm like, oh, do you have something going on with your knee? I'm seeing like really like a knot there. And they're like, yeah, I just, well, it's happened, you know.
Yeah.
Da, da, da.
Yeah. I could sense it as like a heat or something. Like there's a hot spot over here. Or like,
Because when I do run the hand over, it is like a heat. But then I also get this like visual image of what it looked like. I don't know why, but
well, it sounds like you're sort of a visual person. That's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of visual. Yeah. But yeah. And that just sort of started me kind of doing that work with people, like doing sort of energy healing and aura readings as sort of like a side thing that I do. But then, you know, as I'm both practicing my own like planetary magic and just magic in general, read a lot of magic books and then doing this practice, and I'm seeing sort of how they're very you know, they travel along the same sort of roads. But like I said, I do like one is very feminine, right? And one is very masculine.
And I think that's interesting. I mean, so do you think that that's mostly because of like the historical things which surround these communities? Or do you think there's something about the way that is in the approach that makes them more or less attractive to certain types of people?
Yeah, that's a great question. My perspective is that the thing about magic, it's very nerdy, right?
Yeah.
I know you know this. Very nerdy.
I was just telling somebody the other day, it's like, I'm pretty sure any magician that doesn't think they're a total nerd is fucking delusional.
Yeah, so, you're super
sorry
delusional.
Sorry if you're listening and you don't think you're a nerd. If you're into magic, you're probably a little bit of a nerd. So welcome.
Welcome, nerds. You are here.
Nerd's revenge.
Yes. And I don't mean this to be like, oh gosh, you know, because it's nerdy and, you know, women can be nerds, obviously, too, on the call today. But that nerdiness to me is like being very academic, being very exacting, you know, note-taking books, right? Like there's a lot of cataloging and organization of information. I think, Matt, you know, that is what the blessing of sort of that root of like magic is, right? Now with this other root that I'm seeing with like the psychic kind of new age, like the little more woo, to me, it feels more receptive, right? We're learning like to receive the energy, to feel it in our bodies, to be like kind of present with it. You know, it's more of an experience versus like, I'm going to read all these books. Sure. I'm going to make my own notes.
Now I'm going to do this ritual this exact way because this is the proper way to do it. And like, I think for me, there's something there too about with ceremonial magic, there can oftentimes be a robust structure and some authority that's, you know, invested in the history of that structure and stuff that gives you something to kind of like rely on in that way. It's like something that's like, it can be a very useful thing to have to like put a scaffolding into your work or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also very a different approach than something like, you know, that's very like intuitive or instinctual where you're not, you know, relying on any outside authorities and you really are just kind of doing this journey work or whatever you want to call it, like on your own, in your own mind or whatever. So I think that there could be something just in the way that people are like conditioned to in terms of like what roles they're told to have to play and how they're supposed to be in the world and stuff that could make one of these things more or less like approachable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that is kind of, you know, to me, it brings me to present day of like, okay, seeing that there's these two paths, seeing that there's an intersection, especially, you know, for myself. And exactly what you said, I kind of use it like a lot of the magic books I read is like, I see it as structures and foundations, and then seeing where the, you know, the more playful sort of like, okay, where can I, you know, bend and curve around this to make
yeah, we were talking about the idea of like, how can this be hacked, right?
Gotta hack it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Fuck yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of just where my practice is. There's a lot of, you know, again, the sort of the daily rituals I do, I'm doing now involving integrating some ancestral like offering practices and that, and then still keeping up with Kundalini yoga and meditation and, you know, all of that. So it's more me, I think.
Yeah, right on. Well, that sounds like there's a lot of adjacencies I see with what I get up to in my practice.
Yeah, so, I think so.
Very cool. Yeah, I love that. And so I'm curious, in your kind of looking at like planetary magic, what types of operations are you into doing? Like, are you looking at like pick tricks? Are you like drawing pictures? Are you working with the planetary emissaries or their rulers or like...
Ooh, that's like, I think that's even, that's deeper than I go, I think, at this point. Right now, I kind of do a daily thing where, you know, I light a candle that's the color of the planet. I do an offering. I read from the Orphic hymns.
Okay. I think a lot of people would say that that's like doing work with the planetary ruler, right? Like you're reading, like you're doing like devotional work.
Yeah, devotion. Yes.
Yeah, this entity that is the kind of personification of this energy or however we want to think about it. So yeah. Okay, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, because for whatever reason, and I know other people don't necessarily experience it in the way I experience it because it is like a person, right? Like you said, it's a personification, but they feel like people. Like they have like personalities, you know? Like
when they do have personalities. And in my kind of investigation with my own weird system that I'm developing, like some of the places that they're like located on my chart, like they're close to each other and they fight with each other when I go there. I sometimes hear them arguing and shit, and it's interesting, you know? So,
exactly. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. And so much so that, they feel like people. I feel like, you know, and I usually, it is sort of like I make sigil, like if I, you know, need something in my life to change or happen, I'll make a sigil. And, you know, if it has like a certain energy from a planet, I'll charge it with that planetary energy, that kind of thing. But it is more sort of a devotional practice. I am planning on, because I, you know, have the Pikatrix. I haven't made a talisman from the Pikatrix. I have a talisman that I bought from Christopher Warnock, who's amazing.
I have a couple of his books right here on my desk in front of me, actually. So very fun. Okay.
Yes, he's amazing. So I'm going to try to make, because something that's been coming up is like the fourth of Mercury, the Alatori talisman.
Okay.
I don't know. It keeps like calling my attention. And so I'm going to make, that's probably the first one I'm going to make.
Right on. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Just using paper. Nothing, you know, I don't need the metal. Paper does me just fine.
Yeah, I've heard some good advice about this in terms of like, especially when one is first starting out, talisman is much easier to destroy if things go wrong or whatever. Not be a bad idea to like, you know, start out with something that if things don't go the way you want, it's easier to get rid of it. Great advice. I can't remember where that was from, but if I recall, I will put it in this episode somewhere to give that person credit. Okay, right on.
You know, I think we chatted about this before, but because I'm doing this planetary stuff, I was like, I'm not going to look at astrology. Seems kind of hard, right? I don't know if I want to go down that road. But now it's like, I think I need to look at astrology. And, you know, I mentioned Christopher Warnock. He does have this like astrological magic course that I'm planning on doing just because, you know, I've watched all of his videos. I love his approach to magic. It's, you know, he does have like certain things where he's like, I do think, you know, if you make a talisman, it's got to be done in the hour on the day of, you know, he's like, that is like the final form should take place then. But he's very like open to other ways of being and stuff like that, which is very attractive to me.
And I think he does a really good job of explaining things. Like it's not always easy to like break down these complex concepts, and he presents it really clearly and stuff. I have his book, Mansions of the Moon, here in front of me. I've been playing with the mansions a little bit here and there, just dipping a couple of toes in, but it's fun stuff. Very cool. Very cool. I've recently been kind of getting into astrology just in like a very ancillary way. And this was what I was talking about the other day in that zodiacal pathworking talk that I gave. Yeah. But yeah, like there's a couple of references in the Pikatrix where it's like, if this operation is taking place under a planet that like rules your nativity, it's going to like happen really quickly. Otherwise, it's not going to be the case. So like you should, you got to take your nativity into account. It doesn't say this like explicitly, but that what's implied there is that like one's own personal nativity is going to have an effect on how these energies and these operations like play out. Mm-hmm. Which is logical, you know, that makes total sense, like based on the kind of way that the system is thought of. These are the starting context for our connections with these energies, right? If we're taking the birth chart as that being the case. So why not, why not use that as a sort of like map for finding a direct path to access these energies? So that's kind of what I've been playing around with. And so yeah, that's cool. I'm curious to hear about how this class goes. I want to hear about it when you get done with it.
Oh yeah, love to share it. Yeah, for sure.
So I should ask before I let you go here, do you have any questions that you would like to ask me?
Oh.
I always try to give people the opportunity to do that if they want.
Oh, I will ask you the question that people ask me when they're like, or they find out I work with the planets. So what about that Saturn? What about that Saturn energy?
Saturn. Yeah. You know, actually, when I first started exploring this new leg of planetary work, like using my birth chart as a sort of like guide for accessing these energies in what I would consider to be a more direct fashion, Saturn was where I started. I had a consultation with a friend of mine, Cliff, who's a very talented astrologer. And we had talked about some places in the chart where there could be some like these malefic planets, they're all over here in Scorpio, like growing up. There's some imbalances or whatever. Like, there's some places where I was seeing that manifest in my life in unhelpful ways. And so I thought it would be cool to kind of like go and say what's up to that, whole area of life over there and see what was going on and see if I could find a way of like bringing that into a more, peaceful balance within my mundane life, really. So yeah, it's been really interesting working with Saturn. I think that what I've learned from working with him is that like you really do, if you put in the work in a consistent way, then the rewards really will be consistent in the same way that the work is. Like, I think that once you get the ball rolling with it, it keeps rolling, but like you do have to like be very disciplined, and that's what it sort of, for me at least, that's what it's taught me. It's taught me to be much more disciplined than I was before.
Perfect. Yeah. I
What do
think
you
that's
think
a
about
lot.
Saturn?
Oh gosh. Saturn freaked me out. Like, I'll just be honest. Like, with
Oh yeah, dude, intense, dude, dark, dark, intense, like
Yeah.
fucked up. Like I said, it's in Scorpio for me,
Right.
so
Oh God.
like,
You poor
yeah, it's a
thing.
lot.
Yeah.
It's cool. Like Mars is there too. Like it's cool. Like I have outlets for this stuff, so.
Oh God. That's funny. I'll just say that, yeah, Saturn kind of freaked me out. I'm sure you probably read this too, but A Holy Daemon by Frater Acker, amazing book. He basically approached the Holy Guardian Angel through Saturn, right? Which I was like, whoa, dude. Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But so I was intrigued, right? I was like, what is this Saturnian energy? Anyway, so in like my meditations on Saturday with Saturn, I was like, look, I want to know who you are better. I want to understand your energy. What are you? Can you tell me? And I was like, be nice though. Just be nice. And so, I was sitting in meditation and I got this image. I got two images, I'll say, but I got this image and I was like, show me what is your energy about? And then he showed me an image of a sieve, like a sand sieve, right? And gray sand pouring through the sieve. And the kind of message that came with that was like, we're letting go of the things that are not you. The things that remain are what is true to you. This is what I do, right?
Yeah.
So
Burn away all the
removing,
extra shit. Yeah, okay,
throwing away
yeah.
the extra shit. And what is left is what you are. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I love that. Very cool.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, Saturn, that's not so scary, but it is kind of scary, right? Because you kind of have to let go of things that maybe you think are you, but aren't really,
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's, I mean, that's a this idea of this sort of like via negativa or whatever. Like, yeah, it can be very scary to release what we grasp onto for sometimes for good reasons, right? Like, what we have to let go of some of the reasons that we're grasping onto it in order to let it go too. So yeah.
Totally. And I'll just mention the second image I got, and it was around New Year's Eve. So I think you know how these
Sure.
messages from
Oh,
energy
yeah.
entities work. They communicate in these symbols. And so I was like, okay, so I asked again, like, what realm do you, I think my question was like, what realm do you kind of rule over, right? Because I was still trying to get to know all the entities. And then he showed me an image and love this image though, but it was like of an old kind of wiry man, like Father Time, right? Even holding a scythe, right? But he's holding this baby, and the baby is like they're both staring directly at me, right? Both full of wisdom, just staring at me. And I was like, oh. And then it was like, I rule over the space between death and birth. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, the master of the game board that we're playing on is sometimes how I see it. Like, yeah, fuck yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. And I think at the time I was like, you put it perfectly. But at the time I was like, I don't really know what that means. I have to really think about that for a long time.
No, that's fucking dope, though. And that's also kind of a classic image right there of like the baby and the old man and the scythe and like, yeah, it's very very cool.
So it was like, so this is like this image I have of Saturn. I'm like, wow, it's really cool.
Fuck yeah.
So, yeah.
So if any of the listeners here are kind of curious about getting into planetary magic, how would you suggest that they first approach it?
Gosh. Well, I mean, there's obviously books, but I'm going to suggest because, I approached it like I want to get to know people, right? And I just love learning about people and getting to know new things. So I would suggest to try it, like on the planetary day of that particular planet, just sit in meditation and ask the planet to introduce itself to you and then see what happens. Like kind of experience. Right, I'm all about the experience, like experiment or whatever.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And yeah, that's how I would approach it personally.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Merrily, this has been a fantastic conversation. Where can listeners find your work?
Oh yeah, well thank you so much. Let's see. Well, Casual Temple is a podcast, you know, I'm doing as well. You can find it. It's on all the things. It's on the YouTube. It's basically on every podcast platform ever because my husband made sure of that.
Oh, I was gonna ask. I was like, are you like, do you have like a bunch of Virgo or Taurus in your chart? Because you seem incredibly organized. I'm very jealous.
Moon and Virgo, just a little.
Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't even really know what that meant until like a couple years ago, and then I was like,
I'm just now getting into it. This is just me kind of talking out of my ass. So
no, you're 100%. So you're 100% on the money. So that was funny. So yeah, Casual Temple, and then I have sort of my healing website, you know, where all that's kind of organized, and that's called CelestialRingGuidance.com. And I'm on the Instagram under Merrily Duffy and also Casual Temple. And that's probably the best place to like get in contact, I feel.
Okay, right on. Well, do you have any last words that you would like to share with the listeners and I?
I think one that I shared recently and I still kind of like is a message I got is kind of a culmination of messages I got from sort of angelic beings. And when I was meditating on the Sephira of Kether in the Kabbalah Tree of Life. Mm-hmm. And so the message I got was K-N-O-W, no, right? Because I think what it was telling me by saying no and K-N-O-W, spelling it out, is that, you know, your, meaning everyone's journey is to know, you know, it's only for you specifically to know what your journey is about. And it means that to me, it meant like all the mistakes I made, all the beautiful things I've done, it was for me to know. And you know, everybody's on their own path and that really it's just for my own sort of involvement and benefit to really know myself and what all that is. So
yeah, that's really beautiful. That's the reason the game is being played or whatever.
Yeah.
To know. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Merrily, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Lexa. You're so articulate and just, yeah, you're a wonderful host.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to be on your show. People will be able to hear me talking about all of my bullshit soon on the Casual Temple, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
I'm so excited. Thank you.
All right. Well, fuck yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Luxa, what do you have there? It looks like a tattered old Discord server.
Oh, this old thing? It's pretty beat up. But if I do this...
Sweet! Now that you peeled off the outer bits, it looks fresh as hell!
We should call it the Green Machine.
Awesome! I fucking hate it!
That's okay. It should function alright, but it would probably work better if we had more people.
Yeah! We have an awesome crew of chaos, occultists, socialists, witches, and weirdos, but there's always room for more!
Absolutely! If you'd like to take part in any of our many chats, rituals, workshops, clubs, and more, hit me up and I will send you a link. You can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or at luxoccultpod on Instagram.
And remember, resist.
All right, thanks so much to Merrily for joining me. It's always so cool to hear about ways that people are finding intersections between different practices and ways of looking at things and everything. I really loved what she said about Saturn, fuck yeah. Check out the show notes for links to the Casual Temple, where you can hear Merrily talk to all kinds of guests that offer a lot of interesting perspectives, including a conversation with me about chaos magic, approaching a spiritual practice, and much more. Check out the show notes for a link to that. I'm going to be getting to the meat and potatoes of the magical operation I mentioned earlier, towards the end of the episode here. A very kind thank you to the person who shared one of the pieces of tech I'm going to be using with me. It's been really great working with it, and it seems to be doing the trick. So this operation today is about unlocking the gate, which leads to the path to Void House, dissipating unhelpful energies, and offering protection. Before we get into that, I'm stoked to announce a new experiment that me and others will be conducting. over the past few years, I've had some pretty horrible experiences trying to pursue doing group magical work, mostly because I thought that you needed to join like some club or society or whatever in order to do that. And I guess this is like common knowledge in the occult community, but I still had to learn the hard way because I'm slow at social shit. People did try to warn me, but I like didn't listen or I didn't pick up on it or whatever. But basically this common knowledge is this, is that if you're anything like me, and I guess here I mean specifically a woman, joining up with one of these things is probably not going to be a very chill situation for you. There's always going to be exceptions, of course, but just from talking to people, it seems to be pretty well-established thought there. So I don't feel like it needs to be like that, though. There are a lot of inclusive spaces where the basis of all operations is consent, and I think that by adapting what the communities who have developed them have created for our own magical purposes, we can sort of drag things into the modern era a bit. I have a vision for how this can be done, and although I think it will be a lot more inclusive and chill, it won't even require the reinventing of any wheel, so it probably won't be that difficult to achieve. More on that to come here. But first, let me take care of a quick bit of housekeeping. If you like the show and you're into what I've got going on here, you can support it on Patreon, which will entitle you to receive a bibliomancy reading from me, like the one you heard earlier. Making the show is, of course, a pretty wild amount of work, especially for just one intrepid podcaster. But it means a lot to me to be able to do it. Thank you so much to the people who are making that possible by giving on Patreon or buy me a coffee, and to those who are supporting the show by spreading the word. Tell all your friends, allies, frenemies, enemies, and magical associates about it, as well as everyone you meet at the next ceremonial potluck you attend. You can also post about it on social media or write a positive review where that's possible. Both of these things are super helpful, so thank you very much to those of you who are already doing so. And yes, don't forget to smash the shit out of that follow, alarm, bell button, whatever it is on your app, so that you can get updates when new episodes come out. Alright, update about the Green Mushroom Project here. We've got a lot of fun and free activities planned on the Green Machine Discord server. We've got several very cool Eclipse activities scheduled. Thank you to Laura for organizing those, fuck yeah. I'll be sharing a guided meditation on April 9th about Persephone's return from the underworld as part of a ceremony I'll be running that night. Frater Damiana will be hosting a chat about chemognosis and harm reduction on the 19th, and on April 26th, I'll be hosting a special Fungal Friday discussion about the ancient Greek hero and god of medicine, Asclepius, and the rites conducted in his temples. There's going to be a sort of fun crafting element to this one. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to discuss how we think about and use healing magic in our practices before we do this fun little ritual. In general, join us for our weekly Friday chats, our monthly rune study group, and Six Ways by Aiden Wachter book club hosted by Lavender Laura, as well as 423 Bibliomancy, an experiment I've been conducting to discover the Green Mushroom Project scripture on the 23rd of every month. Well, at least for the next few months until the books are all discovered. The participants bring the book that wants to join in, and we combine the 23rd line of the 23rd page into a new text and find the line order using dice rolls. It's kind of like a giant cut-up. It's been a really fascinating experiment so far, loving it. I'm excited to be writing a new Astral Temple meditation, which some people from the Audiophilia Project have requested I provide. It's going to lead into an area of the Green Mushroom Project Astral Space, which has been created specifically for chilling and getting comfortable in one's body for doing magic of a somatic or sexual nature. The folks from the project have told me some of what they would like to have there in terms of vibes and imagery and stuff, and I'm really stoked to be bringing the new space forth with them. The idea of having a chill environment to work in is obviously super important for many reasons, and a lot of them are just having to do with simple pragmatism. Okay, so this brings me back to what I was talking about before with Void House. As a person who has their feet in a few different worlds, I've noticed some pretty stark differences in terms of how things are done in different communities. One instance of this is that I think we in a lot of occult communities could learn from people in a lot of kink communities about playing with power in consensual ways. Playing with power in non-consensual ways is also called abuse, by the way.
the world is full of that, and there's all manner of, you know, fucked up things going on in it, and on pretty much every order of magnitude you look. So the idea of building a structure which can balance safety and inclusivity and serve as a magical refuge to work in away from the broader madness of the world appeals. I've been thinking about this for a while now and have been working on trying to find a way to create a consent-forward magical space that I've been calling Void House, as you've heard. I actually tried this in one venue before where it failed miserably in a pretty heartbreaking and somewhat hilariously ironic way. Not everybody wants to play with power in consensual ways after all. Anyway, just because I was working in the wrong space before doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the vision I have for creating something like this. Now, having sort of drawn up these new plans, I see that we already have everything that we needed all along. Gratitude, Void. There's a lot going on with the concept of consent from a magical perspective, which is something I think is worth investigating and very interesting. I've also had some rather disturbing conversations recently with former members of my social circles that make me understand that there is a lot of work to be done regarding consent education. Pro tip, consent is for more than things of just a sexual nature. It's been an unpleasant road getting here, but I'm really excited to be setting out on this new branch of the path. This is the elixir, as it were. Also excited to be collaborating with some really cool people as we fuck around and find out if there's a better way to do things. I think there is. So in regards to the name, when I think about my relationship with the void and how I interact with it, there is always a sense of liminality. There's a sense of walking along a beach where an endless dark ocean kisses the shore, and where one might stumble upon gifts which have been brought up from the depths. It speaks to me of boundaries and limits as one attempts to interact with it, as well as the dissolution of those things and of the self. One might find when dancing upon the shores of its threshold. It's hard to explain, but I'm guessing that people who work with this concept probably have a pretty good idea of what I'm talking about here. The idea of exploring the void, or of playing with power or limits and boundaries, as is often done in a magical practice, if we think about it, within the context of a safe structure, like a house, appeals to me as a way of making these investigations more productive. There is also an interesting tension between the idea of what the void is and the idea of what a house is. A house is often said to represent the body and dreams and other kinds of symbolic sets, and this seems fitting too, since some of the work that will be done within Void House will be somatic in nature. So Void House is a liminal construct interested in updating the way magical groups are organized and group magical work is conducted by aiming to only play with power in consensual ways, which respect the agency of all involved. Void House is not a group or society or order, per se, but is rather a space which can be erected or visited for a multitude of purposes. Those who have been shown the path to Void House can visit whenever they wish, or erect it around them wherever they go. We are only visitors to Void House, fellow travelers, not members of a club, cabal, or group. We might all have the same souvenir mugs from visiting Void House, but this does not in any way delude us into thinking that we are special or members of a chosen few. Everyone who is willing to do the work of going through the consent education we will offer and agreeing to the house rules is welcome to visit and work or play in Void House. Visiting Void House by agreeing to the rules and going through the education program does not automatically entitle or obligate you to take part in anything that will be going on within Void House. It simply allows you access to the space. The objectives of Void House will be 1. To create, test, and optimize a template which can be adopted for multiple purposes and by different groups, but which generally serves in helping to build an inclusive, consent-forward space, which will include education surrounding consent and power dynamics within groups and relationships, and which will outline a code of conduct and social etiquette. 2. To facilitate a space in which visitors to Void House might connect and collaborate and provide opportunities for respectful and inclusive discussion about magic, boundaries, consent, ethics, power dynamics, kink tech, etc. This will be a section of the Green Machine Discord server. 3. To provide educational opportunities to those interested in the use of ecstatic techniques which facilitate entering altered states of consciousness through pleasure, pain, fear, or other sensations and emotions in an ethical and risk-aware manner. This could be achieved by working with members of the broader kink and magical communities and hosting classes or skill shares. 4. To continue to update, adapt, and optimize our policies and strategies for creating an inclusive, consent-forward space based on what we learn through experimentation. All right, fuck yeah. So although it's still very early days, I'm really stoked about where this might go. I've spoken to a lot of people who seem very into doing things this way, and I've been doing some work towards building some magical infrastructure as well, working with an entity called Voidcat. You might have seen its sigil on some of the artwork I've been producing and posting on Instagram. So the idea of inclusivity might not appeal to the Fraser Cranes of the world, or maybe the Fraser Crane parts of ourselves, if that's like some shadow shit for you, as I think it was for me in the past. Or to people who are not interested in playing with power in consensual ways, I suppose this idea would not appeal either. But for the rest of us who are interested in magical work itself and want a chill context in which to do it, this seems like something that could work. And we're going to fuck around and find out to see. The reason that I make this show is because I like it, obviously, as well as to try to help people. There are some people who I now am 100% sure have gotten themselves into bad situations because they heard this podcast, and that fucking keeps me up at night. Creating Void House will be a way for me to try to keep others from having to go through the types of experiences I did in trying to do magic in groups. Further, as a servant of Hecate, the notion of being of service to magic itself also appeals. I think that there might be a lot more magic in the world if the people who were into doing it weren't having their agency stripped away by, I don't know, being in abusive situations or whatever. So in terms of trying to explain why something like Void House is so needed to people who haven't had the benefit of having, you know, feet in multiple worlds or whatever, I'd like to explain the intersections between what is done in ritual and what happens in a lot of people's kink practices. For some people, this Venn diagram of intersection is more of a circle, but even if what someone is doing in, you know, magic ritual might not look like what someone is doing in a kink scene per se, there are some structural similarities there that I think would be useful to understand. So the following is a meditation on some of these notions. Hopefully this will help fill in some gaps in understanding without becoming too redundant. This is the Void Journal of LDS on putting consent first. Hello, Void. Gratitude. Here I will briefly explore, it's a complex and nuanced topic, some common ground between ritual magic and kink or BDSM activities, and I will advocate that we adopt a similar code of conduct regarding respecting consent and boundaries as is found in many kink communities, applying it to all ritual, not just those that look kinky from the outside. This will be one of Void House's first ventures, developing, testing, and applying such a code in its activities and events. To provide context, the idea of working with power, energies, spirits, archetypes, parts of the self, whatever it is, within a sanctified and designated space often arises as a magical circle within Western occult practices. So similarly, more often than not for many kinksters, these kink and BDSM activities will be contained within the bounds of a different type of container, a scene, which shares many things in common with a ritual or a scene from a stage play, where everybody involved knows what role they're going to play and what they're supposed to do during and after. Agreements are made before about what will happen during and after, and other specifics are negotiated. Following a code of conduct regarding respecting boundaries of individuals and property and attempting to mitigate risk is expected of individuals within most kink spaces. Adhering to this code of conduct decreases the risk involved in doing something risky. All activities have some inherent risk involved, but when we play with powerful techniques or technologies, there is an increased risk of physical or psychological harm. A code, as well as the alchemical properties of consent, allows for magical work or play which could be harmful under different circumstances to instead become a source of transformative or other types of power, while contained within the space of a scene or ritual and within the context of consent. So you see that kind of alchemical property there. In occult communities, and in many religions, there are many instances of rituals taking place where the participants are engaging in what those who are interested in the topic would consider kinky activities. Things like power exchange and things like that. There's a whole rich vein of it in Catholicism. Many people have had traumatic experiences with religion or spiritual or magical groups because those around them
abuse their positions of authority or power, or because people's boundaries and agencies weren't respected. Many kinksters hold the view that if one wishes to dial up the intensity of a scene that they're planning, introducing ritualistic or symbolic elements is a reliable means to do so. It's understood to commonly have the effect of causing a longer-lasting and more meaningful psychological impact. Understanding the specifics of all of this would, of course, dictate what type of impact this is going to be, positive or negative. So it therefore makes sense that being exposed to ritual in non-consensual ways is potentially very harmful. In spiritual spaces, there are often not the same types of considerations made regarding consent, etc., as would be expected within many kink communities and spaces. And this, in my opinion, has been the source of a lot of past trouble for a lot of people, myself included. If what we're doing looks like or is kink, in that it involves playing with power within designated bounds, or might involve sensation play, or fear play, or power play, or things like that, then it would benefit us to adopt a similar code of conduct as many kink communities have in order to help draw the line between ritual and magic and abuse. This will help to protect everyone involved. If everyone understands what is expected, then it will be less likely that someone will accidentally cross a boundary, break consent, or open themselves up to legal trouble or other unpleasantness, which is a real concern. Understanding the laws that surround what you're doing is important. What happened in one group ritual I was involved in meets the legal definition of assault because of what the person who organized it said before it took place. What might have been meant as a joke changed the equation in a very serious way, and had this person understood the tech that was involved, it's much less likely that they would have made this very costly error. Understanding the finer points of what we're doing when we apply magical and kink tech, making sure everyone involved is informed about the finer points, and adhering to a code of conduct which respects consent will help lessen the possibility of our activities being traumatic, in the non-transformative, deleterious sense of that word, or unnecessarily risky. This will allow us to avoid much social strife and many ethical concerns. Any tool can be used for constructive or destructive means, and having a solid understanding of how a tool or technique works allows one to choose which way to apply it. The central experiment Void House will endeavor to undertake will involve exploring the concept of only playing with power in consensual ways, and applying the potentially transformative tech of group ritual or ceremony in ways which empower all those who take part, while also understanding and respecting the consent and agency of all involved and taking measures to mitigate risk. Exploring serious or personal work, limits and boundaries, or the unknown darkness together will require empathy and respect for and trust in one another. By first understanding what parameters would allow for these conditions to arise, we can develop a code of conduct to facilitate this. Other words, if we know what types of things and agreements make people feel safe, secure, and comfortable, we can tailor our code of conduct to help create that situation. This will allow us to constructively delve into areas of exploration which test limits and boundaries or provide powerful transformative experiences in a manner which is less likely to leave those involved traumatized and bitter afterwards, as I believe has often been the case in groups. Not only should we respect each other's boundaries, but we should show a healthy degree of regard for the tech that we use. I have seen instances of kink tech such as rope bondage being improperly used in a ritual context in ways which could have led to a debilitating, lifelong injury for the person being bound. This will not be acceptable in Void House. Visitors will be expected to be educated about the tech that they introduce to ritual and will not put others unnecessarily at risk through ignorance. Being competent at magic does not make you competent at anything but magic, but many magicians I've met seem to forget this. In Void House, we will remember that what we play with is fire, and we will act respectfully. In developing our code of conduct and the consent education which will accompany it, it is my suspicion that we will not need to reinvent the wheel on too many points. Similar work has and is being done around the world by kinksters in various communities. We can look at some commonalities and codes of conduct and tailor one for ourselves to suit our needs. We can also collaborate with people who have been successful in creating inclusive consent spaces. Similarly, we can look at what has and has not been effective in situations where people have organized around the idea of doing group ritual, and we can take what works, leaving the rest in the past. Each person has a unique and valuable perspective, which will be helpful to hear as we build a new type of space in which to do meaningful work together. Gratitude, Void, you have brought forth the blueprints for what is to be built, and I am eager to break ground. All right, fuck yeah. Thank you for listening to Void Journal and about Void House. If you're someone who is interested in the intersections of kink and BDSM and a magical practice and would like to throw your two cents in the hat, you can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or find me at luxoccultpod on Instagram. All right, hell yeah. I'm going to be buttoning things up here by dismissing the crossroads I created at the beginning of the episode after I perform some work towards protection and the dissipation of unhelpful energies. A bit of spring cleaning, if you will. I'm going to start by reading the Orphic hymn to Hecate, she who holds the keys, and we'll then perform a twist I put on an eye-breaking... twisted eyebreaker, perhaps. The formula is the same, though. I will then go right into the Green Mushroom Project statement of resistance before thanking Team Unseen, that's what I call my magical helpers or allies or whatever, because I'm a fucking nerd, and closing up those crossroads, as I said. I want to say thank you so much for hanging out until the end here and for listening about Void House and all the rest. Through a difficult and chaotic time when I was having a lot of social trouble because of a person who had some serious boundary issues, the ideas of maintaining sovereignty of self, love of self, and all of the rest of the words that I was given when envisioning what the Green Mushroom Project would eventually become, focusing on the path to better times especially, these ideas have sort of kept me from going off and hiding in a corner like I probably would have done in the past. They've helped me to push back when people were pushing at my boundaries in ways that were difficult to cope with in the past. Therapy has also been helpful in this, of course, but part of the work that's been done there for me has to do with focusing on what matters in like a big picture way. There is a sense that there's work to be done, a task placed in my hands, or maybe an additional character quest if we want to go with the simulation hypothesis point of view. So hiding in a corner, as attractive as that might sometimes sound, doesn't really seem like a good option, or really any of an option at all. I call Hecate of the Crossroads, worshipped at the meeting of three paths. Oh, lovely one, in the sky, earth, and sea, you are venerated in your saffron-colored robes. Funeral daemon, celebrated among the souls of those who have passed. Foreign one, fond of deserted places, you delight in deer. Goddess of night, protectress of dogs, invincible queen, drawn by a yoke of bulls, you are the ruler who holds the keys to all the cosmos. Commander, nymphi, nurturer of children, you haunt the mountains. Pray, maiden, attend our hallowed rituals. Be forever gracious in your mystic herdsmen, and rejoice in our gifts of light. Who shall thwart the evil eye? I shall thwart it, methinks. In the name of the Queen of Night. 3 7 commandments so potent spake Persephone at the gateway to the underworld. Mater Heca 1, Mater Rex 2, Mater Heca 3, Mater Rex 4, Mater Heca 5, Mater Rex 6, Mater Heca 7. 7 Mater Hecas will thwart the evil eye, whether it be on man or beast, on house or field. Be thou in full health this hour, all. In the name of the Sacred Three, and the invincible Queen of all realms. I trample upon the eye, as tramples the duck upon the lake, as tramples the swan upon the water, as tramples the horse upon the plain, as tramples the cow upon the irk, as tramples the host of elements, as tramples the host of elements. Power of wind I have over it. Power of wrath I have over it. Power of fire I have over it. Power of thunder I have over it. Power of lightning I have over it. Power of storms I have over it. Power of moon I have over it. Power of sun I have over it. Power of stars I have over it. Power of firmament I have over it. Power of the heavens and of all of the worlds I have over it. Power of heavens and of all of the worlds I have over it. A portion of it upon the gray stones.
A portion upon the steep hills. A portion upon the fast falls. A portion of it upon the fair meads. And a portion upon the great salt sea. She herself is the best instrument to carry it. The great salt sea. The best instrument to carry it. In the name of the Three of Life. In the name of the Sacred Three. In the name of all the Secret Ones. And of all of the powers together. Resist. Resist by maintaining sovereignty of the self. Resist by maintaining love of the self. Resist by maintaining fierce loyalty to love and pleasure. Resist with acts of radical kindness. Focus on the path to better times. Fuck yeah. To all those who have been helping in the variety of ways that this has occurred, please accept this episode and all of the effort that's gone into it with my sincere gratitude. Thank you. To those of the past, the ancestors and beloved dead, those of the flesh or of the spirit, and to our past selves as we were, the wise ones yet to come, and ourselves as we will be with further wisdom brought by time. To those of the present, our best selves, thank you for your guidance and blessing. Stay if you will, or go if you must. Gratitude. To the spirits, guardians, and energies of earth, fire, wind, and water. To those of the monody and the void, thank you for your guidance and blessings. Stay if you will, or go if you must. Gratitude. To the spirits, guardians, and energies of the north, the south, the east, and the west, to those of the celestial and thonic realms, thank you for your guidance and blessings. Stay if you will, or go if you must. Gratitude. To all those who would help and protect us, guide and inspire us, who would aid us in proceeding in ways which are most beneficial for us and those around us, thank you for your guidance and blessings. Stay if you will, or go if you must. Gratitude. Gratitude to Angela Guyton and Marilee Duffy for joining me. Check out the show notes for links to angelaguyton.com and the Casual Temple podcast. Much love and much love to everyone participating in the Green Mushroom Project, regardless of what that looks like for you and your practice. Thanks to everyone who's been supporting the show and my other work, both seen and unseen. And most of all, thanks so much to you for listening. Much love. This is Lux Estrada, reminding you to stay strong and stay fucking curious.
What scares you?
Ghosts? Aliens?
Monsters?
The occult? Conspiracies?
Some of you like to be scared, and unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
Some of you try everything you can to avoid it. Unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
We take the topics that scare some, and we dig in to find the source, then present the history to make the paranormal a little more normal.
We also throw in a bit of comedy to shed a light on some of the darkness in the world.
So whether you're scared of bumps in the night, what's inside your own mind, or strange lights in the sky, we cover it all.
We dig in and present all that we find and try to come up with some logical
and not so logical
reasons for the high strangeness happenings.
Sometimes we are scared of the things we don't understand. And the more we understand, the less we fear.
So find us, Unearthing Paranormalcy, on your favorite podcast app. And join us on Facebook, Instagram, and Discord at UMP Normalcy. And until next time,
keep digging.
Welcome to XP Planners.
Greetings, friends, fiends, and lovers of strange and wondrous things. My name is Flood, and I am the host of XV Planets, a bi-weekly podcast of the odd and unusual. The core of XV Planets is a documentary-style exploration into paranormal investigations that I and my ever-evolving group of magical misfits conduct. We take a look at the history, the mystery, then go see it for ourselves, and then we bring that experience, and on occasion, that evidence, to your ears. Alongside the investigations, you'll find a treasure trove of other content, like interviews with authors, art historians, mediums, UFO researchers, cryptid hunters, fellow paranormal investigators, as well as deep dives into the arts, exploring topics like the Killing Joke frontman Jazz Coleman's magical practices and how that propelled the band forward, and whether or not David Lynch was really conducting occult rituals through Twin Peaks: The Return. So follow XV Planets today and get caught up on the journey, because I can promise you, it only gets stranger from here. I'll see you on the fifth plane.